Hi, this is Vincent Godefroy from the Cider House of Bretteville du Grand Caux, and you are listening to Cider Chat.
Episode number 99. Hello, and welcome to Cider Chat. My name is Rhea Wincoller, and I am the producer and cider MC of this weekly podcast where we speak with makers, enthusiasts, and folks around this big old world who are all involved in the cider trade. And this week, we are speaking to Vincent Godefroy, who is based in a northern region of Normandy. There's going to be more on that chat in just a moment. Oh, dear Ciderville, I'm not sure about you, but I definitely have apple-itis, or what I'm calling eye break for palms. It is a condition that has me driving down the road, constantly looking from left to right and marking the spots where I see palms, be that a apple tree, a pear tree, crab apple, you name it. I mean, the other day I was driving down the road with my mom next to me and we put on the brakes and I saw a magnificent quince. You know, I picked that quince right then and I was thinking, what am I going to do with this? I'm running out of time. And really, literally, I'm running out of time. Not because the season isn't going on, but I'm not a commercial maker. I'm just, well, I have apple-itis. And I'm noticing that all my friends in Ciderville have it too. And there is no recovery from it. It's a blissful, happy state. And I think it's about time we have some bumper stickers that essentially say, I break for palms. Wouldn't that be delightful? Thinking. Won't that be fun? Oh my goodness, it's getting crazy around here. All weekend long, I was pressing apples, and that was on my 1880s cider press. And I talked a bit about that on the Cider Press History episode. Let me find the episode number for that. That is episode number 86, which was a little while ago. I got that press back in the spring, and this summer I've used it. I got it going. And, you know, I didn't do a heck of a lot of work to it. I was getting some folks saying, you can't use that press, Rhea. It is made out of cast iron and it's going to like really muddy up your cider, make your juice turn black. And that basically freaked me out. That happened on social media. It kind of freaked me out like, what am I going to do? And then I just started talking to folks and they were saying, you know what? Cast iron presses have been around for a long time. Yeah, you might have a newfangled kind of press and be able to, you know, do it with stainless steel, but I can't do that. I have what I have, and I want to say I've named my press Lucky. And right now I have about, at last count, about 46 gallons of cider in different size vessels fermenting away, much of it in wild fermentation process. That means I didn't add any yeast. I just let the wild yeast go. And right now sitting on the press, I have Perry, and I use both some Bosch pears, which are those brown pears, and they're essentially an eating pear. And I picked a big box of Perry pears from a tree I've been talking about over the past couple weeks. And those Perry pears just have been ripening perfectly, and I've been going back to the tree as the real tall pears, or the real high pears, I should say, have been falling. And they are in the press after they all got grinded up. And that particular batch I've let sit overnight. So it sat out there for 24 hours. And that process is called maceration. It's where you allow the oxygen to make contact with the fruit. And it then browns it, so you get that darker, richer amber color, and it's breaking down the sugars and getting like the tannins, all that kind of juice going. I don't know the technical stuff. I don't know, folks. It's just good stuff, and that's what I've been doing. And on top of that, by leaving the pumice in the basket, I go out every hour or so, and I'm able to squeeze that down, and I'm getting a lot of extraction, much more than when I was pressing and then, you know, trying to get through it. You know, I'd basically throw the apples in the scratcher, would go through, put it in the basket and try to get my press and keep on rolling that through. You waste a lot of pumice that way. And sometimes that's what you have to do. But one thing I've really appreciated in this process is learning how to work with the apple. I wanted to do other things this weekend. I had other plans, but when I went down to see those apples that I had originally put into storage before I went to Europe, I actually put it into Colin Scott's apple storage shed. And Colin was on Cider Chat just a couple episodes ago. You should check that one out. It's episode 93 called Orchard Care and Apple Storage. He has a storage room that sucks out all the oxygen. And so thankfully, while I was gone, it was 90 degree days and a lot of apples dropped off the tree, but my apples were safe and sound. And I had some really heritage apple trees I picked from, which were russet and also Tolman Sweet. And the Tolman Sweet is kind of considered a Massachusetts variety in a way, a really classic New England variety. Those guys came out and they were screaming at me, press me now or else we're going to go. Also the pears too. So I did big major extraction. And as such, that apelitis is just, it's been kind of taking over my life. Getting me a little bit of trouble at home, but what can I say? You know, when you got it, you got it. And there's really no other cure for apelitis but to make cider. Hot dang. So that is what I'm doing. And I know a bunch of you are too, and you're probably lamenting like I am and trying to do everything at home for your honey and your loved ones to not have them go a little bit crazy as you are out on the hunt for apples. I mean, truthfully, if I didn't have everything taking place in the next month or so, I would still be pressing way into November. And I really wish I could, although I'm kind of hearing, don't we have enough cider? And the truth is, no, we do not, dear. We do not have enough cider. I can make a lot more. In fact, this weekend, we're going out to get 30 gallons and I'm going to be filling up that barrel that I had talked about in an early episode about reusing oak barrels for cider making. That was episode number 89. So we're just following on this path together. Apelitis love is in the air, and let's celebrate. If you break for palms like I break for palms, well, honk, honk to you. All right. When we come back, we're going to get a little report from Ethic Cider out in California. California's been really managing the best they can out of this severe fire situation. So do stay tuned for that email update from Ned Lawton of Ethic Cider. The great state of California is pretty darn big. It's just about the entire East Coast, almost from top to bottom or north to south. And if you've been following the news for October 2017, there have been a lot of fires out there. And because of that, I've been following online and trying to just see social media postings about what is happening to the cideries, because that's so near and dear to our heart. Remember, I was just mentioning apelitis. Well, yesterday I got an email from Ethic Cider. I'm on their email list, and I was just so pleased to hear a little bit of an update, and they were providing some information on what folks can do to support the many, many people who have lost their homes and livelihood. And I want to correct myself. It's actually Ethic Ciders, plural, not cider. Of course, they make more than one cider there. And Ned Lawton replied, and I want to read you a little bit of his email. He said that they are finally getting the fires under control in Sonoma and Napa County. Now, that region, if you're not familiar with California, is north of San Francisco, a little north and to the east of San Francisco, also north of Oakland. And he was reading from the Press Democratic that 92,000 acres have burned and have consumed 2,000 structures, mainly homes and a few wineries, and over 50,000 people were temporarily displaced. including a family that was staying at the farm there for Ned and his family were hosting. Thankfully, that family has just received word that their homes are safe and will be returning today. Unfortunately, many others aren't so lucky. At Ethics Ciders, they just completed their apple harvest prior to the fire, and they had their ciders tucked away in the fermenters. And so they was just kind of percolating in the fermenters. And what they did was they were careful to purge their tanks with CO2 regularly so as not to have smoke inhibit the juice while stirring their lees. And just before I go on, stirring up the lees, if you're not familiar with that, this is a technique that is used quite a bit in making white wine and also in cider. And the lees is the schmutz on the bottom. That's the dead yeast cells that are sitting there. Now, if you just let those yeast cells just sit on the bottom and don't stir them, they could gobble up all the oxygen and you might get this situation where you're basically getting a reduction and you could end up with kind of a rotten-y egg smell. But if you stir in the lees and mix it around and you get a lot of contact with all those yeast cells that are connected to the lees, then it's a positive thing because it actually prevents what is called reduction, and the lees actually absorb oxygen and prevent that kind of unwanted oxidation that could occur. It also has more contact, and the thought is that it provides a bigger mouthfeel. So if you're in primary fermentation, you've been wondering, you know, what should I do? Should I rack it over? And I've been hearing people just make their cider and leave it on the lees. Well, you can't just leave it on it. You have to stir in the lees, just like Ethics Ciders is doing there, which is pretty cool, right? And that's just one cider making technique. You could definitely rack it off. All right, back to this email. you know, we got to explain these things as we go along here, right, Ned? Okay. So Ned continued with that they were basically pumping in CO2 regularly, stirring in the lees, and they're concerned about the ash that's floating around the orchards right now and around the landscape. And when I read that, it made me think of the chat that I had with Snowdrift Cider, and that was with Tim Larson. And we were talking about the effect of Mount St. Helena when that blew up in Washington State, right? And just huge ash field went out. And the thing about it kind of creates a low nutrient soil. And truthfully, that's kind of good for apples. So maybe it will be a positive thing in the long run. Just a little side ditty on that. As far as for fundraising efforts for the folks who have been affected by the fire, Ethics Ciders has been sending supporters to the North Bay Just and Resilient Fund, and I'm going to put a link in the show notes to that. And that fund was set up to provide relief to fellow farmers, families, and neighbors that are not covered by insurance or traditional relief services, and helps in the rebuilding efforts. So that sounds like a good tip. I definitely trust Ned. And again, there'll be a link to the North Bay Just and Resilient Fund. He also wrote a nice little piece here, and I want to share it with you. He said, "Rhea, we are so thankful for your podcast and look forward to tuning in weekly. Cider Chat makes us cider makers feel connected to our craft and to fellow cider makers around the world. Keep up the good work and say hi to Palms and let Perry Pear know we are excited to be working on a small pear release for 2018. Ooh, that's exciting. I will indeed let Perry Pear know as soon as that little bugger comes back into the cider house here. You know, the palms, the talking palms, they are really busy out and about at this time of year, but they will all be returning, I promise you, I suspect, this winter. Maybe sooner, you never know. And that is exciting, doing a Perry Pear. I can't wait to hear more. So thank you for that, our thoughts and good hope for all the people of California and anywhere around the world where there's all this like miserable stuff happening. You know, whenever that happens, it's sometimes, you know, to pull up your bootstraps, do something, and to always celebrate with a cider. ¶¶ stay tuned at the end of this main chat coming up for some more updates of cider events happening around the world, specifically one coming up in New York City next week that I'm going to be attending to. In the meantime, we're going to grab a glass now and head back to Normandy. This is an ongoing series of chats that I recorded during my trip overseas just a few weeks ago. When I landed in Normandy, I headed straight out to Honfleur, and I was able to visit all day with Agathe Lettier, who I absolutely adore, from Manoir d'April. I also visited Jérôme Dupont, who was on last week's podcast. He is the family member and part of the Domaine Dupont, which is on the Route du Cider. I also had a little bit of time while I was still up in that area to go a little off the beaten trail. Now, this week's cidery is not on the Route to Cider at all. In fact, there's not a lot of cideries in the area. But if you're heading down into France via Belgium and going along the coast and beelining to see some of the amazing landscape and seashore, specifically a town called Étretat, the spelling of that will be in the show notes. That is well known and renowned for the white cliffs. I mean, giant white cliffs. And there's going to be a photo of that beautiful town. Well, that area, of course, that entire region is often visited mainly also a lot by American tourists to go see the World War II memorial grounds and cemeteries and the World War II monuments. When you're traveling up and down the coast, it's a rather bizarre experience when out of nowhere you'll just see these German bunkers. Now, I first saw German bunkers on the landscape in the Netherlands. And to tell you the truth, at first, actually, I didn't recognize them at all. I was just driving down the road and I didn't realize what I was passing. And then after a while, it's kind of like you start getting a good eye for it and you start seeing German bunkers everywhere. And these bunkers are made out of giant, massive concrete buildings and were tucked into the landscape. And they tucked them up and down the French coastline. And now some of these bunkers are even attached to homes, which is a little uncanny. I'm not sure if I'd be able to handle that, but life must go on. And to take down these big bunkers is just something I really, I'm very curious how they got all that concrete to make that. Anyways, this one area, the city or the village of Étretat, is right on the coast. It's north of Honfleur. It's probably about a 45-minute drive north or so. It's actually quite beautiful. And it is, once you arrive there, it's absolutely stunning. And that cove there almost is flanked on either side by these giant white cliffs and arches that go into the sea. And the sand is not sand. It's actually, I believe it's like a silica. And you can't even pick up the pebbles to take it home. It's like a no-no area. And during World War II, there's all these photos that you could see that are on display there of how they put up razor wire and really fortified that town away from the Allies coming. And our guest on this week's podcast, Vincent, will talk a little bit about a cider that he made and made in tribute to an event that took place there. So quite interesting, a beautiful scenic area. And I wanted to go up there because he has a little cider museum, and that's how we're going to roll into this podcast. You'll hear me walking about and describing the actual building. He has a place for two adults and two kids to stay if you want. It's in a big old cider barrel, a big old barrel. How cool is that? He made that into like a little living space and has quite a little tour set up because he doesn't speak other languages so well, although I think his English was really, really good. Once you get folks warmed up, they really start rolling with it. He has a really neat way on how he has an iPad that he gives guests arriving at his cidery, an iPad, and it comes in a number of different languages, and you just walk around with that. So talk about bringing these modern tools to an age-old technique of cider making. He's really blended eco-like tourism in a way. He has this working farm. He has a place for people to stay. He has a cider museum. And you get to incorporate that into your visit because he was so far out and one of the few cideries out there. And he'll talk a little bit about that. I thought it was really, really interesting. And because I am working towards bringing a group of folks and maybe you, Ciderville, next fall to this region, I wanted to go up and visit that site and meet Vincent and circle around to that incredible scenic area of Étrat, which would also be on our itinerary. So this is all part of the snapshot of what you could have and experience. This is a kind of a classic farmhouse cidery. You really get that terroir in his cider. That's what he's making. He's not making other products at all, and he has a really nice little gift shop. So I thought this would be great for next fall to look at it and to share with it right now with you. So without further ado, wherever you are, and if you can, let's all grab a glass and join this chat. This cidery is called Cider Artisanal. It is from the town of Bretonville du Grand Cal, and they have the Eco Musée de la Pomme et du Cider. So Eco Musée is like a ecological museum, if you will. And this is a cidery of Vincent and Marie-Claire Godfrey. Let's join this chat in Normandy, France.
Voilà. Bonjour, je m'appelle Ria.
Ah, thank you.
Vincent?
Oui, yes.
Oh. Ah. Pleased to meet you.
Okay.
Je n'ai pas pu parler français.
I speak just a little bit English.
Pretty well, I would say. Pretty well. It's a busy day here on a Monday. A lot of tourists coming through and visiting.
Yes, here I have maybe about 5,000 people for the tour per year, 5,000, and 5,000 and 10,000 for the shop, only for the shop.
So about 5,000 people per year come
yes.
just for the tour, and then 10,000 for the shop.
Yes.
Wow, and I see your shop has. Cider from Domfront, you have some Poiré.
Yes. I make the cider, but after I sell a lot of local food.
Regional
food.
Yes, very nice.
Mm.
Yeah, and this building is spectacular.
Yes, that's an old barn.
Yeah. Would this barn be for animals or was it for
no, barn.
For hay?
For the apai, yes. For
the hay, yes.
Mm. Standing in this barn that Vincent said was used for hay, it's two different areas, two loft areas. As usual, there's like a one main room. It's all post and beam, absolutely spectacular in that quintessential Normandy style with like a thatched roof. Well, a little, not board and batten, but sticks up there. And then there's a loft area that's all against beams, too, a little bit of a lower ceiling, and that's where the gift area is. Inside the main room is a full display of all these different cider implements. Starting at the door, there's a large distillation set up for distilling the cider into Calvados, or what we would also know as brandy. Then there's a number of different presses, and then a number of four scratchers that I'm seeing right here that are on main display, different variations there, and that would also be known as kind of the grinder, where you throw the apples in before you put them in the press. In the center of the room, what's really spectacular is this giant wooden screw that you would see in a really old type of press. I'm sure people are still using these here, but it's a giant, giant wooden screw, and he has it up against what is now a metal beam in the center of the room, holding up the main cross beam of this post and beam building. And the way it looks like it is the main beam. I would say It's probably a 10 inches across. So it's like a 10 inch square beam that's been carved into a main screw for a cider press. Then he has a number of different cappers here on top of barrels, a little seating area. It's a really lovely display of demijohns on the floor. Those are carboys put into woven baskets. And a number of bottles set up too, and a lot of little implements that one would use for cider, including different cider jugs and the different taps that would go into a barrel. So the experience here is really sweet. There's a nice array of cider implements and also a display of what you would find in the typical Normandy setting, the architecture too. And just for that, it's really worth it. This is a location that they started, you know, as he said, in 2002, and it's a pretty busy place. He's staying open till 6 o'clock on most days, and this is a good stop on the way down. If you're coming down through Belgium, heading down towards Honfleur, it really gives you a sense of the region, pulls you off the beaten path. The drive up is absolutely gorgeous, and you can walk about the grounds here and see how they have it as both a working farm and as a cidery.
For your people, I have the tour.
Yes.
With in French, English, German, Dutch.
And you walk around and listen to it?
On the story of the...
Hello and welcome. Vincent and Marie-Claire Godefroy, and we have three children, Louise, Antoine, and Adèle. This farm has been in our family for four generations. In the past, the farm produced cereals, milk, and a small quantity of cider. After studying agriculture and working for large supermarket chains, we felt we wanted to come back to the family farm and inject some life back into it. That was back in 2002, the year we turned it into a cider farm. To make enough for the family to live on, we had to diversify. Along with cider production, we also set up a shop selling regional produce. We do guided tours of the farm, and we've recently started offering unusual accommodation, guest rooms in converted barrels. There are several stages to the visit. First of all, we're going to tell you a bit about the history of cider and the various products that are derived from it. Then, you'll visit our apple orchards. And after that, we'll talk about how cider is made and also about the Normandy geese we breed. And finally, we'll explain what a Clos Mazur is.
That's a nice introduction for people to come. Yeah. And you have it in how many different languages? Let's see. So you have English and...
German and Dutch.
Dutch and, French. Of course, French. Wonderful. That's a nice way to provide education.
Because I organize a tour only in French at 2:30 every day.
Every day, more or less. Yes, right. Wow.
Every day, and for the foreign people, you use this iPad. And for example, your guide tour, 5 parts.
I see.
The first is the story of cider.
Right.
That's near. Mm-hmm. The second is the geese, because
you raised geese.
Yes.
Yep.
3, that's the apple trees. 4, that's the making of cider. And 5, that's the Clos Mazur. That's the name of the farm of this area. Mm-hmm. So that's very typical.
Mm-hmm. You started in 2002, and you're making the cider, right? Mm-hmm. You and your wife are making it, or are you the primary cider maker? You are. Okay. And are you also making Calvados too?
No.
So it's just three styles of cider? Is that what I saw on your website?
I make sweet, semi-sweet, dry, extra dry.
Extra dry, okay.
And small bottles,
This one, 104.
On the spiral. This is the. So this.
104. That's a dry.
Mm-hmm.
On white 104 because during the war of the 1st century with the English people.
Right.
You are near Le Havre.
Le Havre.
Near mm-hmm. Le Havre, you have an Harfleur. La ville fortifiée Harfleur.
Harfleur, okay.
Near
yeah.
Le Havre, that's a town with some wall.
Protection, like a wall, wall around it, yes, yeah.
On warriors, English warriors.
Wires around it, like the razor wire, yeah.
Are in the town. On a night, some local people open the door.
Ah, they open up the door, okay, at night.
For the libertad.
To liberate the town.
But the young people are killed.
Ah.
There was 104.
104 people were killed.
The story is on the labels.
Poignant.
And that's very local.
It's a way to memorialize that history there. And so these are, just to let the listeners know, that this is more like a 350 bottle. It's a smaller bottle. It's not a 750 milliliter. It's a bit smaller, which is a nice bottle to go. Mm-hmm. I see that you primarily have the larger bottles here, right? But you also even sell some
another maker.
Yeah, that's
but
neat.
Yes, in Normandy, in France, a lot of people make some beer today.
A little beer at the same time they're making
that's
cider.
The fashion.
Yeah, I'm seeing that definitely. When you are making the cider, it's just, this must be a busy time. Are you going to wait to pick the apples in October, or do you wait till they fall?
Mm.
Do they fall on the ground and then you collect it?
Yeah.
Okay. And do you have a machine that collects it?
Mm.
Okay. And where is your actual, where are you making the cider?
Yeah.
Over there? Okay. Yeah. And how much your quantity are you making per year?
How many bottles?
Yeah.
50,000.
Okay, that's a good amount. Yeah. And is your cider primarily available here? People have to come to your shop, your farm, to get your cider, right? It's not anywhere else in Normandy that they'd be able to pick it up. Is it in any other gift shops or?
No, I sell all my product in 30 kilometers.
Within 30 kilometers?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. 25 bottles in my shop,
mm-hmm.
the half, 25,000. Mm-hmm. And 25,000 in a restaurant, a gift shop, and a supermarket.
But in a store market, okay.
But very local.
Very local, well, of course. That's why people have to come to Normandy to drink your cider.
Yeah.
And your cider, are you using like the natural yeast, or are you adding yeast to your cider?
No, that's natural yeast.
Natural yeast. And is it bottled condition where you bottle it and it keeps on fermenting and you have some like sparkling, like that kind of, it's not champagne, but it's bubbles in it? Or is it still no bubbles?
I know, that's with some sparkling.
Some sparkling.
Yes.
So, would I be correct in saying it's the wild yeast, the local yeast, you don't add any sugar, or you do add maybe some sugar to the semi-sweet, or are you stuck?
No, nothing.
Just the apples.
Yeah.
Okay. And do you keeve? Do you do keeving? Do you know what I mean by that? Where you create that brown chapeau.
Yeah.
And then...
Soutirer, alors. Yes.
Right.
You transport the cider in another tank.
Okay.
No? Yes, that's...
Okay. Is that before it's fermented or after it's fermented? Because I'm not sure if we're talking about the same thing. Before it's fermented.
Yes.
So you create that brown chapeau, and then you transfer it to another tank, and then you go from there. I'm always curious how you manage that yeast, because Normandy has a very special, beautiful quality in the cider. And it's that floral, it's that farm taste. It's why I'm here, because I want to drink that. How do you manage it at all, or do you just let it go? And each year you just are guaranteed that that yeast is going to give you that, it's not going to go crazy or go off flavor. Do you worry about that at all, or?
I mix my apples.
Okay.
For to obtain equilibrium.
Sure. Yeah. Do you check like acid or? You do all that. Okay.
Yeah. And after, I think the terroir is very important.
Yes, it is. And when people are picking up bottles here and they're driving through and they're stopping, what do you recommend that they eat while they're drinking your apples? Because I think the terroir is not just the cider you're producing, but the food of this region.
Yes.
So is it cheese or a particular cheese that you recommend? Or how do you like to drink it? If it was...
For example, I have four cider, but the label blue...
The blue label, yeah.
Blue label is extra dry.
Extra dry.
Mm-hmm. And that's very good with seafood.
With seafood, right. Well, it has like a crab on the front. Yes. Is a crab on the front to say have it with seafood? Is that kind of with the branding? Oh, that's brilliant.
Yes.
Brilliant.
When you eat some seafood when you eat some mussels.
Mussels, yeah.
Mussels,
yep.
Or fish, that's very good.
Perfect.
Yes, very nice.
And is that a dry cider or?
Extra dry.
Extra dry, yes, okay, very dry. Okay.
Very dry.
Nice. And then you have.
And the dry is very good with local cheese.
Local cheese, yes. Yeah. And what are some of the local cheeses that you have? And you'd probably be able to get it in this town here, right?
Neuchâtel.
Neuchâtel, yeah.
Yes, that's the local cheese.
Perfect, yeah. With a little bit of bread or...
Yes, a dry cider with Neuchâtel, with butter, salt.
Butter and salt.
Yes.
Butter and salt and the cheese too, the Neuchâtel, or just butter, all three, butter, salt, and the Neuchâtel?
No, the bread with some salt butter.
Oh, okay. All right.
On Neuchâtel, on a dry cider.
I got it. Okay.
That's
typical. That sounds really good. How many different apple varieties do you have here? And that you're blending into your cider?
I use 30 varieties.
Okay. And are they... traditional cider varieties that you would find in Normandy. Yes. Could you just name a couple?
Not all of Normandy, but very local.
So what would that be? What would be some of those?
Muscadet de Dieppe, Antoinette, Saint-Nicolas. That's very local of this area.
This area. Mm. Now, are there a lot of cideries in this area? In just this local area, like within... I'm not going to say 30 kilometers because that would bring me down over the main river there or whatever, right? But within like 15 kilometers?
No, here in this area, you have a lot of wheat on flax. That's better for the business.
Right.
Because cider, that's difficult to earn some money. With the cider, I think that's difficult. So a lot of farmer prefer make flax or wheat.
Mm-hmm. Now, you've been making cider for a long time. 2002 is, you came here, yeah. And did you begin to sell your cider? What year did you begin selling your cider? Was it 2002? Mm-hmm. What have you seen in the past nearly 20 years in terms of the interest in cider? Are you seeing it growing? And
yes, I assume yes.
When do you think that started? At what point? Like how many years ago did you start seeing this, you know?
Yes, but not comes.
Not like, yeah, it's a little steady, right? Yes. We're both holding up our hands right now, yeah. And Vincent, I had my hands too straight up, and he kind of corrected me to put it more on a 45 degree maybe, or even less.
Because today, for example, I make 50,000 bottles, but after, if I go on,
yeah.
I don't know, 100,000, for example, that's difficult to sell. And after, if you make 100,000, you must to use some industrial technique, and that's different.
Yeah. I want to make sure I understand what you're saying. So after you're making that a much larger amount, then you have to become more commercial in a way. Is that a way to say it? Yeah, I could tell you don't really want to do that.
Because after you must to employ it on commercial
or export. Export,
that's expensive, so that's a lot of problem.
You gotta produce.
And that's too difficult for me. I prefer 50,000 and sell a lot of local food, a bowl in a bed and breakfast.
Mm-hmm. You have a bed and breakfast here on site, so people, how many people could come and stay here? How many people can you accommodate for a bed and breakfast?
I have only one bed and breakfast.
Okay.
So that's open to April until the end of September.
From April to the end of September?
For 6 months.
Okay. And is that like for two people could stay there, or how many people can you?
Two adults and two children.
Two adults and two children. Okay, nice. Is this one of your daughter? Okay.
My youngest daughter.
Lovely. Bonjour.
I think that she makes my job after.
Oh, yes. Good. Future cider maker.
Yes.
Wonderful. Well, that's a tradition, how it goes and goes and goes. I want to ask you a little bit more about the tourists, because I'm trying to find out what's going on with cider in all different parts of the world. So you said, you know, it's a slow growth. Who are your main visitors? From what countries are they primarily coming? Or are you seeing a switch of more visitors from different areas in the world? Are they primarily French?
The first is the French.
Mm-hmm.
People for the visitor.
Mm-hmm.
The French. After, the second is Belgium.
Belgium, okay.
Yes, because that's not...
not too
so
far, yeah.
Yes. Belgium, German.
German.
Dutch. Yes. Not a little English, but not...
not too many. May I try a little bit of your cider before I go here?
Yes.
So you're shaking your trees and that's how you're getting them off, yeah. Yeah. This one is
dry,
okay.
That's my machine.
Yeah, that helps your back, doesn't it? Cheers.
Okay.
To a good business and a good harvest.
Yes, thank you.
Very delicate.
That's typical of this area. Because that's léger.
Léger.
Not too
strong. You know, it has like a certain minerality to it. I think it's like your soils here.
Yes, so.
Yeah. Really, so this is a dry cider that we're drinking right now. And it's, the color is a very light amber. It's effervescent, really nice small bubbles coming up, really consistent. And what Vincent is saying, it's not like it doesn't like it's not like brute, you know, or anything. It's very delicate, dry, and with a little bit of sweetness, though, just a little bit of sweet, you know. So a little residual sweetness, and maybe that's just the apple speaking through there. You know, when you make a very clean cider and you're not adding anything, we're actually able to taste the apple versus the sugar. Mm-hmm. You're tasting the apple sugar. And that's very nice. Well done. Well done. Yeah. And the bubbles are just delightful. What do you find you sell the most of your ciders? Which ones are the most popular, people who keep on coming back, the dry? Yeah.
Because in this area, the people drink only the dry.
Only the dry. Yeah, because the sweet is... Mm.
Semi-sweet is better for the tourist.
Yeah.
Because sometimes he don't know the cider.
Right.
He prefer more sweet.
Yeah, they have a sweet tooth. But this would go well with a little cheese plate and or that butter and salt on the bread. Yeah, very nice, very nice. Mm-hmm.
This visit so pleasing to meet a really entrepreneur within the cider scene in Normandy, France. Very different each location that I visited, from Jérôme Dupont, which is exporting around the world, Manoir d'April with Agathe, who really caters to local tourists, but also is exporting, and then Vincent at this Eco Musée de la Pomme Cidre is just amazing because he saw the opening and he went right into it. And so for some of you cider makers out there who are wondering, how do you attract folks for your cider? Sometimes it's not, doesn't always necessarily begin with the cider. I know that's kind of like a roundabout way. Sometimes you got to look around at the assets in your area and pull that in and make the cider be the value-added product. And if you're a cider tourist like I am, sometimes driving around from country to country, coming down from Belgium into France along that coastline, which I did last year, had I known that there was a location like Vincent's, I would have definitely stayed in that barrel. How much fun would that have been? We're going to touch base on a couple of festivals coming up that I think you should know about. Well, the first one is happening in New York City and the surrounding area, and that is part of Cider Week New York City. And it takes place beginning this Saturday, October 20th, and goes all the way through the 29th. And there is some really great events. I'm going to be in New York City next Wednesday with my recorder, walking around Astor Place during the Hidden Stars mini festival, if you will. And there is a whole list of cideries that are going to be there. Tickets are only $30. It's from 6:30 to 9 o'clock. You know, you have Bad Seed Cider Company. We have Big Apple Hard Cider. Oh, that's like New York City's rockin' center focal point. Danielle von Schreiner, she was on episode number 35. Black Duck Cidery. I love their social media posts. Brooklyn Cider House, Descendant Cider Company, all really cool, excellent ciders. I love drinking their stuff. Diner Brew Company, Ducks Draft Cider, Eden Specialty Ciders. If you didn't listen to these episodes with Autumn Stoshek and Ezra Sherman, that's 90 and 91. Dang, they just hit it out of the ballpark. That was recorded by Alex Crow. the Roving Podcaster. And we also have Kite and String, episode 96 with Melissa and Garrett. They were talking about permaculture. Well, Kite and String is going to be there too. That'll be nice to meet all those folks in person. Embark Craft Cider Works, yabba-dabba-doo. Let's see, Graf Cider, Hard Scrabble, Hudson Valley Farmhouse, King's Highway, Metal House Cider, Nine Pin, Original Sin, Orchard Hill, Penning's Farm Cidery, Phonograph Cider, Rootstock, Slyborough, South Hill, and Treasury. I haven't had cider from all these places, so I'm getting thirsty just reading the list. So that's neat. If you can't make it to that, at least you'll be able to listen to it virtually. And hopefully when you do, you will always have a glass of cider in your hand. There is one more event coming up that I want to talk about, and that is Cider Days, happening on the first weekend of November. And there is wonderful events taking place all over the map. Many of them are free, some are ticketed, and it is a cacophony of apples and a delightful array of people from all over the world. Ooh, I'm so bummed out. I'm missing it. You got to know I am so bummed out. But that's what you got to do. When there's a wedding in the family, sometimes you got to do something else. Anyways, on Friday night from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Root Cellar, it's going to be the second annual cider meetup, or what I like to call Here, Try This. You could bring a bottle of your own or a bottle of a commercially made cider and share. It'll just be a $5 corking fee, and the Root Cellar is open to warm up and shoot the shit with people and get to know them. And that is a nice thing to do when you're going to be seeing them all weekend long. Who knows, you might start up a friendship that will last a lifetime. At least that's what I hope. That's what we do in Ciderville. And then moving into the weekend on Saturday night, this the big event, which is called a Cider Salon. That's a 2-session tasting that is going to be held in Turner's Falls outside in a tent. I'm sure they're going to be keeping it warm and cozy. Many tastings have been held in a tent, so I'm sure this one will be fine. And I heard from Emily Ritchie, who's the executive director of the Northwest Cider Association. I actually had Emily on this podcast on episode number 41, and she let me know that they're going to have a table at the salon, and they have a single varietal Porter's Perfection from Liberty, a hopped cider from Square Mile that won a gold medal, actually 3 times a gold medal, and then a Perry from a Southern Oregon location. She didn't actually say the name of the cidery. She says a tiny Perry maker in Southern Oregon, and there's a 100-year-old tree from a place called Eden Vale. I'm sorry I didn't look up this ahead of time. I'm not sure who she's talking about, but anyways, that's going to rock. They also are sending along a specialty cider from Finn Rivers, and that's the Force Ginger. That would be for Ben Watson's talk, along with a Two Towns Lambic style. Two Towns is a Portland, Oregon cidery. Just cool dudes running that. Both of these cideries are places that I plan on catching up. I hope I get to do that coming up very soon and have them on the chat. And then there's also going to be a small batch Perry made from Eden Vale that's going to be, oh, that's Eden Vale. Okay. They'll have one at the salon from Eden Vale and also at the talk at Tom Oliver's Perry Talk, which is going to be held, I believe, on Sunday. That's a ticketed event. And then he also does a free event on Saturday. If you don't know Tom Oliver, you should. He was on this podcast, and that was episode number 29. And just a delightful man, a delightful cider maker. So that main event, the Perry Talk, is actually sold out already. But there's going to be lots of Perry being passed around, and I'm very happy, and I know Perry Pear is very happy that people are kind of getting to notice Perry at a level that they hadn't before, such as Ethic Cider mentioning earlier that they're even going to have a Perry coming on for 2018. So lots of wonderful things happening. If you have an event and you'd like to share it with the listeners of Ciderville, do send that my way to Rhea@ciderchat.com. And before we roll out of here, I'd like to give a big tip of the glass to the patrons of Cider Chat. You too can become a patron by joining the Cider Chat Patreon page. It's a website that helps content creators like myself keep on doing the work that we are doing, such as creating this podcast just for you. So if you think it's been worth an hour of your time, and I hope it is, because an hour is a lot of time, you wouldn't believe how many hours it takes me to put this podcast together for you, all in love too, then please consider becoming a patron today. Again, you could just go to ciderchat.com and find the link, or Google Cider Chat Patreon. That's spelled P-A-T-R-E-O-N. Next week, I'm going to be broadcasting the 100th episode. Well, actually, it's kind of fun. I'm going to be in New York City when the 100th episode is going live. Oh, whoa. That's kind of fun, right? Yeah, I think so. And to think that this one is episode number 99, I mean, that's nothing to snuff at. That's pretty cool. And yet, there is just so much news yet to come out and so many makers and people to chat with. There's just an endless supply of good news in Ciderville, and I'm always so happy to share that with you. It just pleases me beyond compare. Just, what a wonderful time we have, don't we? We are lucky indeed. Yeah. Well, I think it's time for me to sign off and go get that glass of cider right now, away from my laptop, while I am safe and sound. This is Rhea Windcaller signing off just for now, and I'm looking forward to seeing you in Ciderville.
Yeehaw!